10 million hungry teens, give or take, have options that leave them with impossible choices. And so today we pause to ask, can farming save the young and their cities?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,074th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or, hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Paphos who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Struby on the boards. Hello, Jason.
Happy to be here.
Jason.
Yes.
Have you ever grown your own food?
I've tried. It's not easy.
You've tried?
Yes.
What did you try?
I tried to grow lettuce, and it turned out all right.
Then you did grow your own food.
Yeah.
Well, it was a perfect storm of bad news about food and our young. First was a BBC video entitled The Lost Streets of Chicago. Search it and watch it if you want to learn about the hopelessness of being young with a gun on the streets of Chicago. Second was a Chicago Tribune article entitled Why Food Stamp Fraud is Fairly Rampant at Corner Grocers in Some Chicago Neighborhoods. Search and read, but only if you want to learn how 174 corner grocers were booted out of the federal food stamp program, leaving 174 neighborhoods without a neighborhood grocery. And third, this we did last week on the Food Chain, was a research report from the Urban Institute entitled Impossible Choices, Teens and Food Insecurity in America. This study detailed how 10 million of our young, give or take, live with limited options that leave them with impossible choices. Think of that for just a moment. 10 million hungry teens. That's like Los Angeles, filled with hungry teens, with limited options, which means they have impossible choices. And you and I all know what that means by impossible choices. If what the Urban Institute says is true, or is even remotely close to being the truth, then we're in for some pretty ugly times with our young. And we can certainly see why things are kind of unraveling here in America the Beautiful. So what to do? One answer arrived the other day in the form of a book by Michael Abelman, in which he tells of using the idle hands of the city to turn urban lots into verdant farms. And so that thought leads us to ask today, can farming save the young and their cities? We did book Michael for a discussion on the topic, but he at the last minute had to fly away. So I am honored to have a co-host with me today, Bill Graff, who is a, like me, raised on a farm and working in the city.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed. So two farm boys, take a look at this question today, a really tough question, see if we can set it up here. Can farming, I think Billy Graff and I probably both look at farming as a salvation of our youth when it gets right down to it.
You know, we have such great examples, even locally here, about how farming can change people's lives. There's the Homeless Garden Project.
Homeless Garden Project, yep.
There is the Community Garden Project. There's the program at UCSC that teaches college kids how to farm.
Yep. I was thinking of myself as I ran away and went to school and was studying something, and I was involved in school politics, and it was a very formative time. I was a student body president. We were having all kinds of student unrest and whatnot, and after a year of that, I went back to Montana and got a job working on a ranch. And you know what? Every morning you'd get up, and you'd have a big breakfast, and then you'd work. And you'd work, and you'd work, and you'd work, and then when lunch came, you ate a big lunch. And then you'd work, and you'd work, and you'd work, and when dinner time came, you ate a big dinner. And then you know, at the in the evening, you get on a horse and ride off into the prairie sunset.
If you still had any energy. A lot of times it was go to bed early so you can get up the next morning when the sun does.
Yeah. And so with that kind of work in our backgrounds, we look at the potential of farms in the city and scratch our head and wonder about all of those youth, of 10 million hungry youth.
Well, you think of a place like Detroit, current situation in Detroit, Michigan, where, you know, the auto plants went away and a large bunch of manufacturing went away, and you have all of these young people who are, they don't have anything to do. There's no work. There's nothing really to do. And that's never a good look. I was a young person, and so were you.
Yes. And when you don't have anything to do, what do? You go get in trouble.
Well, there is that old thing your grandmother used to say, idle hands are the devil's workshop. Yeah. Well, guess what?
There you go. Yeah. So let's see if we can work on this question, can farming save the young and their cities? And kind of divide it up into chewable parts. The first part being, can hungry teens grow their own food? Jason, what do you think?
Jason did.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible, but you definitely have to work at it.
It's possible. Okay, so that's the first part of the question.
It takes work, for sure.
It's work. Can hungry teens grow food-producing gardens into income-generating farms?
With guidance, I'm convinced of that.
With guidance, so that's a question we're going to work. And then finally, you know, can income-generating farms bring jobs and hope to the youth of our cities? And if you think of all of those kids, 10 million kids, we're going to have to do something. I mean, it's not a can that we can kick down the road much farther. If you see what's going on television every night.
Well, there's also another component to this discussion that we kind of have to bring up. If the young people in this country don't learn how to farm, and farming is the demographic for farmers is getting older, it's maturing as we speak. So if we don't have young people learning how to farm, then
who's going to grow our
eventually?
Food?
Who will be farming? Mm-hmm. We'll be importing everything.
Well, so those are the questions we have on the table, and it's Bill Graff and myself, engineer Jason Strube, and you are the guest out there today, so you have to pick up your phone and join us with your wisdom. We'll have the questions and we'll play with some answers, but we're looking for you to provide guidance here. Phone numbers today, 831-479-1080, 831-479-1080. So pick up your phone and join us. It's you and me and for some What's Eating What radio. And What's Eating What today is the cities eating our youth. And essentially, that's what it appears to be happening. We have our youth.
That is,
you know,
true.
There was a time right before World War II when most of us lived on farms. And so we had this innate wisdom of what it is to grow food. But not only that, we had the wisdom of what it is to work.
That's right.
And we had no choice. Yep. You know, we got up on the farm. There's not many laggards. You know, you don't last very long on the farm. Everybody and every animal has a job on the farm.
If you don't pull your weight, you soon hear about it.
You soon hear about it, absolutely. So when we're living on those farms, we have this wonderful knowledge of what it is to work and the intelligence of how to grow things. A lot of intelligence there. And so when we moved into town after World War II, that war gave us the intelligence to learn how to grow food without labor. I mean, we turned those weapons into fertilizers and pesticides and to equipment. And
well, the other thing that happened during the wartime was folks like you who went into the service and then came back often did not go back to the farm.
They
learned a skill in the military of some kind, and they ran with that. They used the GI Bill to get an education, and they off they went.
Yep, there it was. And you know, I just think of all the weeds I used to hoe when I was a kid.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And how I wanted anything but that. Yeah. And that's what the military gave me, was a way out of that.
Yeah.
But we went away, and
but people, it never really left you, did it?
It never did.
See, that's the thing. You can't look, if you hoe weeds, in your youth. You know what it's like. You know what hard work's like.
Yeah. So, but we moved to the city, and then we raised our children in cities. And do we give them that kind of know-how? So, boy, we're just about to our first break. We have a phone call. Margaret's calling in. Oh, boy. Talk about hydroponic gardening and the city. There is so much opportunity. Can we tap it? Can we use that opportunity to save our youth and their cities? It's their cities now, folks. Can we use farming to save them and their cities? Do stay tuned. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, Bill Graff, Jason Struby, and you, 831-479-1080. 831-479-1080. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Can farming save our youth and our cities? 10 million hungry teens. What are we going to do with them? We better do something, because if we don't, all hell is going to break loose. Right back.
Farm.com says we can earn a 5, 6, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
And we don't even have to own the land. We can lease it year to year.
MetroFarm.com says we can grow fruit on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, vegetables in city greenbelts, and ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
We can even grow flowers on our wooded hillside.
Get all the information you need to grow for profit at MetroFarm.com, including the complete guide to earning 5, 6, and 7-figure incomes by farming small parcels of land. Meet the farmers who earn the money. Find experts at MetroFarm.com who will examine your property and assess which crops to grow. Meet consultants who will help steer your project to profitability. And get the latest news about the business of growing high-value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
We've always dreamed about farming a small parcel of land. At MetroFarm.com, we can get all the help we need to stop dreaming and start growing.
Well, folks, 10 million hungry teenagers. These are not adults. They're not children. They're teenagers. They're right between. So they don't have the responsibility, and yet they almost have the abilities. So the question is, can they grow their own food? And there's two components to that question. First of all, have we given them the knowledge of how to plant a seed in the ground?
Can they actually do it?
Yeah. Have we given them the knowledge? Have we taught them how to put a seed in the ground, how to water it, how to feed the plant, how to nurture it, how to protect it from predators, how to harvest its life? Have we taught them that? And then the second part of that question is, will they? Have we given
them...
That's
the harder part. That's the
right.
harder part.
That's right. Have we given them the incentive to do that? So those are the questions. That's our first set of questions we have on the table today. And we're going to pick up Margaret, who has a question about, or a comment about, hydroponics. Margaret, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hi. I watch YouTube story about hydroponic gardening, and it looks so perfect. You can, you know, where Santa Cruz has all these murals all over town on the sides of the walls. Well, also you can have complete community gardens growing on the sides of the walls.
Right? Vertical gardening.
Yes. I'm not so crazy about doing it in BPA plastics and PVC piping, but you know, the alternative to plots of land is completely unnecessary, and we can do it just vertically, or excuse me, horizontally.
That's right. And you know, there's a whole giant movement of, you know, urban farming using all of those new technologies, hydroponics, vertical farming, lights, and so on and so on and so on. But you know, Margaret, those are, when you take a plant out of nature and put it into a plastic tub or something, you then assume the responsibility for ensuring all of those natural elements are there.
Yeah.
So you have to, you essentially have to be very, very clever. And if you're not, the things die really quickly in that artificial setting. Whereas if you have a good organic soil system, things take care of themselves pretty much. Okay.
Yes.
So now I turn the question back to you, Margaret. Do you think those inner city kids can take on, have we given them the intellectual capability to do that kind of agriculture?
No. It's basically a mute issue, and it could be a new renaissance, you know, a new revolution for these kids. It'd be so perfect. Also, hemp, you know, could be a new clothing.
Mm-hmm.
They can make shoes. They can make, you know, houses from that stuff. Everything.
But so, the potential is immense, isn't it?
Sorry?
I said the potential of what could be done is truly immense. With
yeah, it's unlimited.
It's yeah. almost unlimited. But do those kids have the incentive to pick up a shovel and start? Or have we given them the incentive? We know we haven't given them the know-how to be able to do that kind of agriculture. But they could be trained, right, Billy?
Absolutely. The training's not the hard part. I use an analogy in the radio business. I can teach anybody what they need to know to talk on the radio, but I can't teach them to show up on time.
Then why didn't you teach me?
Well, you
how
didn't,
to talk on the radio.
You didn't ask.
Okay.
But the hard part is getting the person to show up on time. That's really the most difficult part. If they get to the radio station, it's all good, you know.
Okay. So they're in the city.
We got to get them to show up and pick up a shovel.
Margaret, how do you give kids the incentive to do something like that?
Well, you give boys the incentive by having pretty girls there.
You know what? She's got a point.
You know what? A quick story. When I was studying Chinese up at UC Santa Cruz, there was a little garden right next to the language lab put on by Alan Chadwick. He put a garden there.
It turned into a big garden.
Turned into a really big deal. But when I was there, I would stumble out of the language lab. You know, it was dark and dank, and you're listening to tapes of language. And I would sit on a log next to this beautiful garden, and there are all these pretty girls digging in the dirt. And all of these boys digging in the dirt with them. And I was thinking, what the heck am I doing, you know? So what you say has a lot of truth there. But, you know, I think of those inner city kids. And there was a BBC documentary I watched on YouTube. It's called The Lost Streets of Chicago. And if you, you know, Google that and watch a few minutes of it, you come to the realization that these kids are, you know, living on guns.
Right. Well, you know, if you model it like they do things like the Sea Scouts.
Right, exactly.
Model it where there's, you know, I mean, even getting like a lapel pin that signifies you're in the club, and it becomes, you know, this pure thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be, you know, pretty easy. I don't know.
You know, there was a guy here in California. His name was B.T. Collins. And Governor Jerry Brown hired him. He was a light colonel in the Marine Corps, blew off an arm in Vietnam. And Jerry Brown, Governor Jerry Brown, first time around, hired him to run the California Conservation Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was working with NBC, we followed him around for a week, videoing him. But the interesting thing about B.T. Collins is that he took all of these kids one step away from jail and put them into the California Conservation Corps. And he laid down the law. He said, these are the rules by which you must live. Many of these children have never had
rules.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so he gave them these rules, and he said, if you follow the rules, I'm with you. If you break the rules, you're out of here.
It's the military.
Exactly. And so he fired 10%. But the 90% he saved And when we followed him around California, these kids came out with the biggest smiles on their faces you've ever seen. It was just wonderful to see. And he had them doing these incredible jobs, clearing out creek beds, all tough work. And so what you say, you know, is true. It could be done. But how do we provide them with that incentive?
Well, you find somebody like B.T. Collins to do it.
Is that what it takes?
I think so.
It takes somebody like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does.
It takes divine leadership, you know. Just, there's special people for these kinds of special positions, and they're out there. I know, personally, teenagers just, they love me. They do. I have the best rapport with them. They all want to, you know, sit at the table where I'm at, and we talk and do things. I don't know. There's just certain people that have great rapport that can motivate these kids, that get their trust. They don't talk down to them or treat them like they're buddy-buddy. They're just real one-on-one.
Well, let me ask you another one. We're coming up on a break, but I'm going to ask both you, Margaret, and Bill Graff here, and Jason Struby as well. What about providing a disincentive for them not to?
Oh, that always works, too.
Well, yeah, but I think it's...
Well, this is a question I want you to think about. Yeah. We're going to have a little break here. What about providing the kids with a disincentive not to become engaged in taking care of themselves?
You mean like a beating?
Well,
or something else.
I don't know. Let's talk about it. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, our guest, flew away, leaving us to our own devices today. But thankfully, we have lots of good devices. We have you. We pick up your phone and dial 831-479-1080 like Margaret did. We have Bill Graff, and we have Jason Struby, and we have a lot of fun. Do stay tuned. Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson sitting in the pilot's chair. We have all kinds of people showing up for this wonderful program. Aren't we lost, Margaret? 831-479-1080 is the phone number today. The question we have on the table. So we have 10 million young people. 10 million young people, teenagers, okay? They're hungry. 10 million, that's like Los Angeles filled with hungry young teenagers. So what do we do with them?
How do we motivate them to get involved?
How do we motivate them? So the question is, can we use farming to save the youth and their cities? Because if we don't put them to work doing something, then they will pick up guns and do the other thing.
Well, look, they will be Salinas or Watsonville
or Chicago
or any city where they have a lot of young people and not enough to do.
Yes. And Jaunty's with us, just joined us too, and he's doing the following show. And I understand you're doing a show similar.
I can't believe how similar, actually. A lot of what you're talking about is... I was very glad that I tuned in on the way here.
So it's interesting. So we're talking about whether our young can pick up a shovel and begin, first of all, can they grow their own food? Is it possible for them to grow their own food?
And I believe it's entirely possible. There's only two things they need to do. They need to be shown how to do it or look at a YouTube video, because guess what? Those are out there now. You can actually watch a computer screen and learn how to grow something. That's not a problem.
Right.
The more important thing, the thing you and I learned by osmosis, by living in a situation where there was no other choice, is motivation.
Is motivation. So
look, when the old man comes in at 5:30 in the morning and says, "Get up, son, it's time to feed the chickens." There is no choice. It's like the drill instructor in the Navy.
Yep. So
there is no choice.
You do it.
You get up.
Well, a lot of children today, my kids would probably be somewhat cooperative. They'd be interested. But from my understanding of what a teenager is in our contemporary society, if your dad comes in and says, "Get up and feed the chickens," you say, "No, I'm busy texting." So there may be a cultural problem that we're facing.
Yeah, so those of us who were raised in agriculture, raised on farms, or in other respects raised by parents who had us up working all the time.
Or who weren't raised like that but ended up going into the A, Peace Corps, or B, or Army.
Or something, yeah.
Something where there's somebody that tells you to get up and do something early in the morning.
So
either way, look, you don't have to be raised on a ranch to do this, but you have to be taught motivation.
I've got the suspicious belief that it's possible for people to self-motivate, and I think that's really where we want to go as a society. Yes, you can have a socialization process like the military or something along those lines that will mold people into exactly what you want them to be.
So can people pick themselves up and pull on their boots in the morning and go to work? Can they motivate themselves?
John T., look back on your own experience, okay? Because this is really the best way to try to figure out if it's possible. Were you given, are you a self-motivator, or initially did somebody teach you how to work? Because I've seen you work. You work hard, dude. But the thing about it is, were you taught that, or does that come from inside?
You know, I might have learned that at such a young age that it's difficult for me to recall, but I do remember my father bringing me out into the garage and showing me things that he was working on. And then also sometimes he'd bring some of his work home and he'd show me what he was doing and he'd let me do some of it.
You know how my father imparted that motivation? Dad, I want that. You can have that, son. Get a job and earn it, and you can have it. And that was always the case.
Well, I went to
my father always gave me of his time, but never gave me of his money.
Well,
never.
See, I made a deal with my dad when we left the ranch and we moved into town. There was a deficit of work, of, you know, stuff to do, right?
Sure.
Once we moved into town, because, you know, there was no...
Well, now we're getting to the core of the issue.
But see, here's what happened. I got bored one Saturday, and I wanted to buy a bicycle. So I went to my father, and I said, look, I got an idea. And he said, what's your idea? And I said, if you'll help me buy a lawnmower, mm-hmm. I think I can... I've got enough people together. I've gone around, and I've asked people if they want me to mow their lawn. And they said, yeah, but, I need a lawnmower. So my dad bought me a lawnmower. And then I paid him back from the lawn. Paid the lawnmower off in 3 weekends.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I've got a lawnmower. I've got money to buy the gas to run the lawnmower, and I got the motivation. Hey, this is a good. This is going to work out.
Okay, mm-hmm. But again, you came from the farm to the city,
I also had a deficit of stuff to, and because I was so used to doing things.
That's right. Okay, but now let's go to the city and let's talk about these kids who have not had the experience of having worked. Let's talk about the kids who have not had parents.
Well, see, that's
right.
Okay,
that's the common thing.
Now, is there a way that these kids who have not had any parents or any parental upbringing other than get out of the house and leave me alone, is there any way of bringing them into farming? I mean, we can teach them how, but where is the incentive?
B.T. Collins. You got to have people like that who can motivate them and show them.
The kids in the California Conservation Corps had a choice. Go into the CCCs or go to jail.
Give them a choice. Okay. When they get arrested the first time for doing something they're not supposed to, instead of sending them to jail, give them a choice and send them to somebody like B.T. Collins.
You know, maybe we can illuminate some possible answers by going the long way around. My wife and I were having a discussion the other day about some of the threats to humanity that we're facing now and we're facing imminently in the next century.
Right now. I mean,
yeah,
10 million hungry kids, you know.
Absolutely. For anybody to say I'm unemployed is kind of a cultural perspective. If you realize the number of issues and problems that are facing society, you should never be unemployed. You got something that you got to do, and we got
to. Well, there's enough work to go around.
Collectively, we've got to get these things done, or we're not even going to make it. You know.
Yeah.
So in that environment, with that being, it's a purely cultural perspective that leads people to this state of systemic decay.
Right.
That culture is, I think, fed a lot through the educational system, mm-hmm. unfortunately. It's fed a lot through through the industrial mentality.
Okay, well, let me ask you this, and I'll go right back to the fundamental question. Can farming bring culture back? I mean, if you think about farming, it has to.
I think you're really onto something.
Not only can it has to,
that's
really.
A beautiful and profound way to reconnect people to, well, being humans.
But being human and having work,
right.
having responsibilities, being able to see a need and fix it, and taking joy
working. The need is, dude, we got to eat. We have to eat.
Okay, that's true. But we're not. We don't have to feed ourselves anymore.
Yeah, but soon it will get to that point, won't it?
We have figured out how to feed ourselves without having to feed ourselves.
Right.
And therein lies the crux of the problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson. Wow. 10 million hungry teenagers. Can farming save them and their cities? If not farming, what? We will be right back. Do stay tuned. 831-479-1080. Holy smokes, got a lot of people on the line. Do stay tuned. Well, folks, we're talking about how the possibility, I should say, of whether agriculture, farming, can be used to save the youth of our cities and their cities. Can we, we've had a bunch of phone callers. They left us because
we went to a break.
A break, and I was ignoring them because our conversation was getting heated. But the possibility, but we run up against this fact that kids don't need to feed themselves anymore.
That is true.
And people
7-Eleven, they can go to 7-Eleven and buy a sandwich.
And they can buy a sandwich with food stamps given to them by the government. Okay, so how, I mean, that is incentive not to work. Am I wrong?
Big time. I think that there's specific disruptive technologies that have come along in the last century, but there's also an overall pattern.
Yes.
And the overall pattern is dislocating us from the means of production. Farms are really great to get Karl Marx out of the grave and say, write another book. I mean, that guy, obviously, there's some problems with some of his ideas, but he also would go and he would talk in detail about how labor and industry functions.
Yes.
And those dynamics are changing radically. Michael, I hate to tell you this, but somebody forwarded me the other day a video about a fully automated robotic farm.
Sure, I've seen that. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Really quickly, let's pick up Mary. Mary, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hi, Michael, Billy, and John T. Thank you for the program. You know, the interesting thing about what's happened to our cities is how much government has supplanted the family.
Oh, yeah.
And so when you talk about the old man waking you up in the morning and putting you to bed at night with a full belly, government is doing that with a food stamp program. So as you began the story, you talked about how there's crime now around food stamps and using it for other things than food. So they're shutting down the grocery stores who are involved in the criminal act. So I think the first thing you have to do, and the most important thing, is to remove government from the inner cities.
We have to have some government, though, to run the police departments and the public works and all that stuff.
That's fine. But stop having the government be the family. You know, that way you can start over again. And there are a couple of stories that are very pertinent to how you think about this. There was a cult movie called The Lost Boys.
Yep.
Yeah. There was a book called The Lord of the Flies. And what you find in both of those stories is that there are no families. And so once you take away the family, you lose a generation. And we are looking at not one, not two, but now we're going into three generations of government running the families.
Well,
and so now we have lost families, lost generations.
Lost
boys. Government can't do it. They can't. The families can. But government can't. I'll let you guys talk about it on the air.
The other thing
wait a minute, Mary.
Yeah,
just a minute,
yeah,
Mary.
Wait, don't go away.
Don't go away. Do you think farming can bring culture and families back?
Absolutely. It can bring back respect for yourself, which is the thing that's missing.
Yeah.
Well, that, to me, that's the bigger
thing.
That's
the other thing that government tries to give you respect by handing you food stamps, handing you cell phones.
No, you have to earn respect.
You have housing.
You have to earn respect, though, don't you?
Well, you don't have self-respect if it's handed to you. And it's described as, here, you deserve this.
Well, I think what you're saying is very provocative, and I think that you're onto something there. Of my take on it is that sometimes governments are great and sometimes governments suck. Sometimes families are great. Sometimes families are terrible.
Oh, that's true.
But if you have self-respect, if you have a sense of self, then your ability to resist those influences is dramatically improved.
And how do you
listen? You know, I understand the thing of government being good for some things, and they are. They are not good for supplanting the family, and that's exactly what they've done. And they're not letting go of it.
Oh, there's horror stories. There's horror stories of the government stepping in and separating
children.
Well, I think what the terrible thing about what government has done with food stamps is that they've succeeded in getting rid of the father.
Well, they've incentivized not having the father.
Yes, exactly.
And to not work.
True.
And to not work.
And not even have a concept of it.
And
worse than that, it's in our educational systems.
Well, it occurs to me that we have a situation where motivation is everything. You know, I mean, I was unemployed one time for 12 minutes and it was the worst 12 minutes of my life. My God, what am I going to do? You know, and it was.
But the kids have lost that. And that's what Mary is saying,
is
that the kids don't have that ethic.
If you look at these cities, we're looking at, like I said, we're now going into the third generation of not working.
Yeah.
And, the second generation of no families.
Mary, we're out of time.
10 million kids.
Mary, we're out of time here, but...
For one reason, it's government.
Thank you for the call,
Bye.
Mary. Whew! Well, we'll be right back with the answer to everything. Stay tuned. Well, folks, there are 10 million hungry teenagers on the streets of our cities, give or take, that according to the Urban Institute. Some of those children, many of them, are living with very limited options on their food and their living, and they end up with impossible choices. For example, trading food stamps for bullets, and that is where we're at. What on earth are we going to do to pull this back together? Because we have to do something, otherwise it will all fall apart. Can farming be the place to start? Well, Billy?
I don't know. There's a program that comes to mind here. You've obviously heard of the Girls and Boys Club.
Yeah.
Okay.
Boy Scouts, Girls and Boys Club.
There are various programs like this that get kids off the streets initially and get them into some kind of a situation where they're motivated a little bit. Denzel Washington talks about he was lost. He was gonna be the best career criminal possible until the Boys and Girls Club got a hold of him, and then they motivated him to want something else.
Okay, Jaunty, can children be motivated?
What the kind of image that came to mind earlier, you guys were talking about, well, I mean, if you just imagine the choice between having a gun in your hand or having a seed, it's a gun is death. That is death culture. Excuse me. And a seed is life
culture.
Yeah. From my perspective, I think you're saying something beautiful and profound by suggesting that that farming is
a possibility.
There's a cultural gene there, just by the nature of what one does. That is, I believe that's something that could heal.
And that which encourages the family, if you're farming, if you're growing, that encourages family life because it encourages children to work on the farm. It encourages stick-to-itiveness.
Cooperativeness.
Ingenuity.
It, there's a whole lot of things that get stimulated.
It encourages faith.
It also encourages incentive, innovation. We were talking, right. John T and I were working on a problem together yesterday all day.
Hair pulling out of your head.
And we finally hit on the solution and got it fixed together. But we were talking about this during the break. Neither one of us was going to give up on this problem until we got it fixed. Mm-hmm. Because we have a lot of incentives, one of which was the boss across the country trying to listen to his radio station and he couldn't hear it.
But the best incentive of all was the incentive that you received when you completed a job.
That's right.
Well done. And, you know, we talk about self-respect and where you get self-respect. I believe that's really where it starts, is by doing something, doing it well, and doing it yourself, and overcoming the obstacles, and being able to say, I did this. That's where you get self-respect.
Yeah.
You don't get self-respect given to you. And I think the worst thing in the world we can do is try to give people self-respect, because it's just an arrow into their heart. That's at least what I think. And
wow, I hear music. I think we're out of time.
Folks, this has been the Food Chain Radio Program. Left to our own devices today to talk about farming and the city and our youth. Got to do something really soon. This has been the Food Chain Radio Program. Remember Michael Olson's second law of the food chain. The farther you go from the source of your food, the less control you have over what's in that food. Thank you all.
Been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.